Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
All right, here we go on a Friday. It is Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. And oh yes, Drew is rocking his Pacers gear. About time.
The only piece of gear he owns, those shorts.
About time.
Do you have a shirt?
Dusty cannot stop staring.
Do you have a Pacers shirt?
Dusty can't stop staring.
Yes, and I've worn it before on the show, the gold hickory one.
Okay.
I've worn it before on the show. I'm thinking about ordering another one.
We'll talk about the finals, obviously, at some point in this first hour. What a game, what it was. Halliburton did it again, this time on the road in OKC. And yes, Drew is rocking his retro Pacers shorts.
And due to the fact that I'm rooting against that kid, big Pacers fan in this series, happy to see him get game one.
Yeah, we'll get to Cash Out
Go
Bro
the
later
books,
on.
You know, rooting against the kid.
Yeah, we'll get to Cash Out Bro at some point in the first hour or two of the show, who lost himself potentially $15,000 on value of the cash out offer that he had. If you were following that story yesterday, when we were talking about that on the show as well. But you guys can hit us up on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line 913-586-7965. Video stream also going to be up and running on Facebook, Twitch, YouTube, Twitter / X. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any of the show. It's also a Friday. Getting ready for the weekend, 1 o'clock hour, Fan Club Friday. Jay Binkley going to be in studio.
He enjoys a happy hour on a Friday, you know?
Always. We also have some guests joining
us. Yeah, our friends over at Boulevard. I have collaborated with Russell Stover, Kansas City Institutions, if you will, on a s'mores-based stout, I am to understand. Binkley, big stout guy. We needed him for the official ranking amongst things. They told me they're bringing beer. They also told me they're bringing chocolate.
Well, the s'mores part of it.
So, yeah. Well, yeah, but I just assumed the chocolate flavor's in the beer. But they also made it sound like they were going to bring some chocolates.
From Russell Stover's. I'm in.
You're a fan of, like, if it's anything like your favorite, just, like, good, solid milk chocolate, you'll be set.
Yeah,
who do you like a dark chocolate, or do you just...
I'll do a dark chocolate, okay. But who doesn't like some milk chocolate as well, you know?
I was just checking. I didn't know what your qualifications are. You know? Just which one you prefer, that's all.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Good.
Jake Eisenberg going to join us in a half hour as well. They are in Chicago now as the Royals get set to take on the White Sox for the weekend. I think it was a late arrival in Chicago yesterday, but Jake's going to join us here in about 30 minutes or so. We'll talk to him about the Royals series win against the Cardinals. That's where we're going to actually start the show today, as a matter of fact, where the offense for at least one series came alive. And this is the hope that there, whether it was the lineup tweak, whether it was just even Caglione, while his numbers aren't there, the fact that you're worried about him, you're making pitching changes you would not have made maybe to address that and how that might have affected the series a little bit. But most notably, they're hitting with runners in scoring position. Vinny Pasquantino is looking more like the guy that we saw last year drive in nearly 100 runs prior to his injury. He's 7 for his last 17 with runners in scoring position. And they needed every bit of those runs. They needed every bit of it because we all know Cole Reagans just did not have it yesterday. I don't know what's going on. We can have a deeper conversation about him.
Yeah, I probably need to talk about Cole.
And then, of course, just the way the whole series played out. Both teams were putting up runs. And that three-game stretch in St. Louis was the best offensive stretch of the season.
Yeah, this is the only game, the only three-game stretch in which they've scored 5 or more runs in every game. So, I understand people are frustrated because they look at that game, one of the series, and I'm still a little confused, I'll be honest. about all the hate Q gets. I guess they think that a manager should be getting them to 110 wins, and if anybody else was managing this team, they'd be doing it. So I don't want to get into the Q stuff because it doesn't make any sense to me, the, I think, high level of criticism he is getting versus you're probably just not used to this is how analytically based managers manage baseball games. And I would say to this point, relatively successfully based on the number of wins they've gotten. But yeah, this is the most offense we have seen for the most consecutive number of days we have seen all season long. That's taken out. We can talk about Cags in a minute. Cags, who only has one hit in his first, 13 plate appearances or whatever it is. So it's not like he's putting up individual numbers that are huge. But Vinny remains white hot. Now he's hitting with runners in scoring position on top of just hitting for average. India's coming around. Salvi had a doubleheader again because apparently doubleheaders are his thing. Bobby put a ball out of the park. You know, you can start seeing some of the stuff that you're like, yeah, those are the things we're looking for. That's how they get to 5, 7, 10 runs 2 days ago. We were there on Tuesday. So I came out of that series feeling great. It was on the road. Cardinals had a better record than you. You took the series and a lot of your stars started to hit. The only thing people, and if I don't even know if anyone's worried about it yet, were a little down on is that Cags had one hit. And I'll be honest, don't care. I don't care that he only has one hit through 13 games. That means nothing for the level of success he will have as a major league player.
No, haven't you noticed the 3 games decides everybody's career in any sport? The first 3 games you have it, it tells us right away what you're going to be. No, I don't take that stuff seriously.
You got more people texting you, that kind of stuff?
I don't take it seriously at this point. I think any reasonable sports fan and semi-knowledgeable sports fan understands that when you have 3 baseball games and 2 of them were in 1 day of the 3, it doesn't tell you anything yet. Let's see what he does this weekend. Let's see what he does the next couple of weeks, frankly. Everybody would be more enjoying the debut if he would have had 5 or 6 hits in his first 13. Sure, of course. If he was hitting 500, we'd all would be going crazy at that point in time. But yeah, anybody changing their opinion one way or the other about Jack Caglione based off 3 games, that's just like, I can't take you that seriously yet. You know what I mean? And it's kind of crazy.
I completely agree. Can I point out just one stat that should just make if you just happen to be, and I think it's the minority right now, which is actually a pleasant surprise to me. I was a little fearful that it was going to be the majority. But let me just give you one stat so you can feel better about where they are. And it's the Bobby Witt Jr. beginning of his career. Bobby Witt Jr., who, do we all agree, Bobby Witt Jr. is a superstar. He's one of the best players in the sport. Everyone's thrilled that he's here. Runner-up for MVP last year. Might be runner-up for MVP again this year to Aaron Judge. His first 20 at-bats gold, he had 2 hits. 2. So if Jack Caglione manages a singular hit in his next 7 plate appearances, he will have been off to just as hot of a start as Bobby. So it's just like, come on. He hit 100 for his first 4 or 5 games, too. It's not that important that it's on that stretch. And yesterday, the second game of the doubleheader was by far his worst of the 3 games because he was kind of lost and striking out and clearly looked frustrated by the time that 3rd strikeout hit and that final at bat of the game yesterday. But those first 2 games, he's putting the ball in play left and right, making hard contact, all the stuff that you would expect out of a good hitter.
And weeks from now or a month from now, these conversations, if he's still struggling, will be way different. But I don't even know if you can even call it struggling. 3 games is not enough to have any sort of evaluation of anybody. Someone said if Bobby went 1 for 13, we'd be talking about it. Again, Cody just gave you the stat. Bobby Wood Jr. started his career 2 for 20. So I don't know. I don't know what the point would be with that overall. Also, yeah, I'm going to talk about a player that's been in the big leagues for 3 or 4 years having a bad stretch more than a guy that's played in 3 games for his entire career.
Yeah. If you're paying attention to 3 games, terrible energy and just a really terrible way to look at it. I think that this comes from I think Kansas City goes through its eras. Certainly. I will tell you some of this comes from like a football mindset, trying to take it to baseball gold. If a guy, and look, I'm a little quicker to write people off in football, as you know. You and I have kind of gone back and forth on that. This would be like if his first 8 games as an NFL player, Xavier Worthy, had 112 yards, and you're like, whoo, does he just stink? Is that just it? Because that's the equivalency, right? And he's not even played half his season, but it's like first 4 games, he had 76 yards, and you're just trying to write the guy off. In football, a lot of times you are expected to contribute right away and be good. Baseball, 2 for 20 stretches probably happen, I don't know, 30, and he's not 2 for 20, he's 1 for 13. 1 for 13 stretches happen in baseball, I don't know, 10 times a season for every player, even the superstar ones. Like, I can go look up a 1-for-13 stretch for Aaron Judge this year if it'd make you feel better. But, like, there's no reason to worry about it. It's 13 at-bats. Look, if he goes 1 for his first 40, we can come on the show and we can have a real conversation about whether or not he is ready for that role. But I'm not worried about that. And somebody said on the text line, when they put him in when they left him in to start the second game, even against the lefty, they're trying to make sure he's kind of like Vinny. They want to see if they can play him every day. Like, can he be an everyday player no matter who the starter is on the other side? And that would be the inevitable goal with him. So they have a lot of faith in him. Nice rundown and right, by the way, too, by the way, for the test he got.
The one thing, though, we're going to see, and people are upset that they pulled him for a defensive replacement late in the game. If you were listening to the show a week or so ago, we had J.J. Cooper from Baseball America on. We had Jim Callis from MLB Pipeline on. And they both had mentioned that, especially early in his career, and therefore the early in this season for him at least, they are going to be making late game defensive substitutions for him. And I understand in the first game yesterday that when he got pulled from the game, the Royals were up a run heading into the bottom of the eighth. Ultimately, we know the Cardinals took the lead. Then the Royals tied it. The game goes to extra innings. And so Cags was not batting in the 10th inning. Instead, it was Mark Canha. And that goes back to what you were saying. They're going to do the same formula every time. It doesn't mean it works every single time. But those games yesterday will not be the last time you see Caglione get pulled for a defensive adjustment in the 8th or 9th inning of a baseball game. That's going to happen quite a bit here early on because they would like someone to give them better than average right field play in those spots. It backfired in that regard.
Yeah, we can,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, a lot of what this like kind of comes down to offensively is pretending like people aren't allowed to have bad outings. Like Cole Reagans isn't allowed to have a bad outing. Taylor Clark, who up to the point before he gave up the Herrera home run that was absolutely smoked, he had pitched nearly perfect right to that stage. But, like, are we just going to pretend like in that game that the bigger reason why they lost was probably because Bobby Witt Jr. muffed that ball at second base? Like, that was the bigger problem in that game, truthfully. And then Bobby Witt Jr. the very next day did what he does, or very next game, did what he normally does, Gold. Made a catch that I think one, maybe, other player in all of Major League Baseball could make. Did you see the slow motion version of that catch from Bobby Witt Jr.? My goodness. That is objectively a good series. And now you just got to hope that they go kick the teeth into the Chicago White Sox. Are the White Sox playing any better, by the way? I've not looked.
They just beat the Tigers a day ago or something like that. I'm not sure, man. I don't really follow the Chicago White Sox. They suck. I don't follow them. The White Sox stink.
Dang.
I mean,
they stink. Why would I be following the White
Sox? They might have new ownership, but they do stink.
I mean, in the future, they might have an owner now that wants to spend some money and put together a winning organization by 2029. But no, they're 20-43, I guess the Chicago White Sox are. And last time out, the Tigers lost to the White Sox. That looks like the White Sox maybe split the series with the Tigers recently.
And this is the challenge like that comes with any of these decisions. Like from the 6-6-0, this was one of the biggest complaints from the ones that they just had. Pulled Noah Cameron too early. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about that decision from Matt Cotrero, if that's your complaint overall about what the Royals did. First, my general rule of thumb on this is, you better have been saying that at the time. I do not allow for you say that after the runs get scored off of the bullpen, because then it's kind of rich, right? So that's fine. Let's just presume, I don't know text line, let's just say you did this. What's funny about this is where opinions vary. Gold, at the time, and even after, I actually thought it was the right decision. I don't want to put Noah Cameron, a rookie pitcher in only his 5th start, who a majority of his starts have only been at 80 pitches or so, back in through 2, 3, 4 of the lineup, 3rd time through the order. Statistics tell us that is a dangerous, dangerous spot to put a starting pitcher in. So I probably wouldn't have done it. I wouldn't have blamed a manager if they said we're going to leave him out for another inning. It's fine. But I don't think that that's just like an automatic decision. Noah Cameron stays in no matter what. I actually think there's some room for argument on that one.
Yeah, I think this is just what being a baseball fan is, though. There's 162 games, and you magnify games more than they should be magnified on a daily basis.
Sure.
And so each decision, like managers get too much credit when it works, and they get criticized too much when things backfire on them. But the decision-making process of Noah Cameron, I know that was the thing that everybody was stuck on yesterday. I mean, I went out to dinner last night, and literally the waiter who I've gone there before. So like, he was like, "What? Why did they pull Noah Cameron?" Like, that was, I'm not even kidding. That was the number
before
one.
Before you even asked for a drink?
Well, I mean, I ordered, but yeah, but that was the number one topic. And yeah, that's not why they lost game one. I know, like, I know we want, you know, everybody, Bobby Wood Jr. is an incredible baseball player. They lost game one because Bobby Wood Jr. made a terrible defensive mistake. It happens. But that's why they lost game one, not because Noah Cameron was pulled. And in the bullpen that in the game before had gone six scoreless, that game wasn't good. Then in the night game, the bullpen, I believe, was six scoreless again. Steven Cruz and Angel Zerpa were incredible. So it's just it's a daily thing. Literally two games yesterday. But you could see the difference between one game to the next in the bullpen. The decisions were, I'm sure you guys, the decisions were great in game two, right? Because it worked. Mm-hmm. And I know it's a result driven business, but I'll, the only thing I'll say is, and I it's a Friday, should be a good day. We're off
to a series. Very negative.
The text line is really negative to start off on a Friday. I'm very confused. I'm very, very confused by what is
they just won a series.
Like, someone says
summer.
Carlos Estevez, someone says, is a bigger problem. I don't feel comfortable. He leads the American League in saves for a team that's, you know, only three games above 500 or whatever it is.
But he blew one save, so it's over.
I just Is this what we're doing today? We're just gonna like bitch and moan the whole time? That's what we're doing on a Friday? I don't
know. And look, his stats are so good that there's just no way to know, but it's just history suggests that it is a very, very, very bad idea to choose to pitch a guy a third time through the order in the middle of the lineup before, especially for a rookie. Can I point out that, like, I guess this is the part with it, and you're right. It does feel like we're off to a negative start. And this is the question I have for you guys as it relates to, because I was stunned at the amount of negative energy towards Q and the manager stuff last night, because I didn't really see it. Look, I thought they should have lost the first game when they were down 7-2. They should have won the second game. They ended up reversing those, and they should have won the third one. They should have won 2 out of 3 this weekend. They did it. The manager before was the feels guy. That was Dum Dum. That was the guy who was like, just do what I want. Numbers don't mean anything and stats don't matter. And he just goes based off veteran leadership or nonsense like that. Now you got the guy who bases it off of the numbers, and you don't want that either. What do you want? What do you want in a Royals manager? The perfect blend? Terry Francona, he changes pitchers at the drop of a hat. So, like, what is it exactly that we're looking for out of these management decisions? Because I think we're pretending like every management decision should be perfect, Golden. What we said is, like, sometimes you make the right decision and it goes poorly. Sometimes you make the wrong decision and it goes well. You're just playing the numbers that over the course of time, you will make the right decisions by correctly choosing the same statistical solution every time and then kind of going with it. And the manager before went to the playoffs 0 times and won, and lost all of his games pretty much the entire time. And so, like, this manager has at least made it to the postseason. So I'm having a hard time doing it. Also, I felt coming out of the series, I was feeling great. Got the series against the Cardinals, winning a homer. Vinny's hot. Cags got the call up. The offense is scoring runs.
I think my biggest concern, and we can talk about it more later and ask Jake Eisenberg in 15 minutes. My biggest concern is the Cole Reagans, right? What is going on there?
I'm very worried about that.
That's to me the conversation. Where, like, what are you most concerned about after the series? Is Cole Reagans came back from the IL. And we all saw what happened. The fastball was not there. That one was 92 just right down the middle for, I think it was Arenado that launched that ball to left field.
Yeah, it was.
What's up with that? You know, he's had a groin injury twice. Is it just not fully recovered? What else?
His arm strength, velocity's down.
What's going on there? That, to me, is a bigger concern, bigger picture for this season than, I guess, you know, hindsight being 2020 on a potential decision that may have happened in one of the games. But they did win the series, believe it or not, against the St. Louis Cardinals. And now they head to Chicago. And they said, look, we all know where Chicago's at. This is a team that last year they dominated. It's a team that so far this year they've had a good success against. They have 9 games left, including 3 this weekend.
I'd like them to win, like,
against the White Sox.
7 of those 9.
But this weekend, if they can win the series, obviously you all want to sweep, but win the series, can Cags get going a little bit? And then you get off Monday and you come back Tuesday and it's a home debut against the Yankees at Kauffman Stadium. They got a chance to have some momentum here as they get back to Kauffman Stadium and see where they're at. But I do the Cole Reagans aspect is what I think is really concerning right now with the team out of everything. Like truly, right? Like right this second, I'm not worried about Cags' start. The offense hopefully showed now has some signs of life. I definitely am not worried about Carlos Estevez. My goodness, he leads the American League, as I said, in saves. Angel Zerpa had his best outing, maybe one of his best outings of his career. And what Steven Cruz provided. Like, there's a lot of positives out of that series, despite the frustration that, you get greedy and you think you should have swept them. But we also know Monday night in game one, the Royals, we all probably thought that was an L. So baseball has a weird way of balancing itself out a little bit.
And I was just looking up. I can't believe somebody said they were worried about Estevez. He leads baseball in saves. Baseball, Gold. And he has a 1.95 ERA. Is there something... Is there something you and I are missing on the status? Like, the real concerns over Cole Reagans, I'm not even here to argue with. I mean, there are some signs that point to some trouble there, but I was like, wait, am I crazy? Let's talk cheese for a minute. You know what? Being too late, I got to get back.
I don't like the text line start today. What's going on? What's going on, people? Come on.
It's just too much. It's too much. Let's take a quick break. Let's talk about the cheese for just a minute, because their special teams coordinator, Dave Tobe, was talking about punt returns the other day. And normally I'd be like, well, why the hell would you guys talk about punt returns?
On June 6th.
Huh. Well, that's because he mentioned Xavier Worthy as a possible option. He mentioned what Nico Remigio had done. He had mentioned Smith and Royals as all possible options. But specifically, it seems like the rumor mill in the streets is that Worthy might be their best available option to do that. The question is the juice worth the squeeze on that? Like, I got to be honest. Are we risking Xavier Worthy health over punt returns in year two? Now, his targets are likely to go down in a lot of ways per game because Rishi Rice and Hollywood Brown, and if these guys are healthy, there is only one football kind of thing, so maybe you just want his athleticism anywhere.
I think the reward is worth
I'm a little nervous about it.
Yeah, I think the reward is worth that. He's not your number one wide receiver. I know we saw last year down the stretch, of course he was, due to injury and all that, but going into this season... I think if we're being honest, suspension potentially there for Rice, but put that aside for a second. Rashi Rice is the number one wide receiver for this team. We all agree, right? Heading into the season, everybody agrees with that. So if this was a situation where Xavier Worthy was clearly the number one wide receiver, then I'd be with you.
Monster,
if you tell me in August that we find out that Rice is out the first six games and Worthy then is bumped up to one, then Worthy will not be returning punts. I can almost guarantee you he would not be doing that. But if Worthy and Brown and Rice are all good to go in that particular game, I got no problem with Worthy returning punts. I think it's worth the risk, I guess, if you think there's risk there. The reward to me is too great.
We all watch quite a bit of football. Can you think of anybody as big as Xavier Worthy who's still out here returning punts? Who returns punts for the Bengals, Drew? I mean, I honestly don't know. This isn't meant to be a knock. I don't know.
I mean... How does he know
Jamar
if I
Chase.
Can tell you necessarily? I mean, it's...
It's not T. Higgins.
They had a mix of guys last year. No, it's not Jamar Chase. It's not T. Higgins. They had, Trent Irwin last year. They had Charlie Jones last year do it. They had, it was a mix of guys. Chase Brown was back at some point. It was a mix of guys.
Yeah, like, I'm
I
just,
mean, how big is Xavier Worthy? Like, what do you mean big? Like profile? Or do you mean, like tall?
No, I just...
Because you said size, I think.
No, not size. Just, like, his ability and how much he plays. I just don't want him...
I think for the same reason of, hey, they need to take more deep shots down the field to get the ball in the playmaker's hands, I think this is a chance for him to naturally get the ball with the playmaking ability he has. I mean, he's used to punt returning. He did it at Texas. He's got the home run capability. I think that you don't unleash a new aspect of your offense, but him being able to take a punt 35 yards just at the drop of a hat because he's shifty and has got the speed helps an offense that struggled at times last year anyways to, put points.
Yeah, but
you give yourself an extra opportunity to make something special happen, I guess.
Nobody else puts their wide receiver at risk like that. Maybe in a handful of situations, right? Like when they used to pinch hit Tyreek eventually, and he would just come in the single
biggest moment. But Worthy's not your number one wide receiver.
Moment. I understand, but like I'm looking at the guy.
It doesn't have to be a guy that's fifth on the depth chart to return kicks for you.
For the most part, it is, though. Like, I'm looking at it. So like last year, here are the biggest names guys who regularly return punts. Not return like five or six, but return regularly. Marvin Mims, Khalif Raymond,
Marvin Mims was what? Wide receiver two?
And then I got to be honest.
Yeah, Mims was two last year.
Zacchaeus?
Oh, the Zacchaeus.
He was like wide receiver three with
Atlanta.
And
Calvin Austin, he was probably wide receiver three for the Steelers last year.
You're saying you'd rather have Jalen Royals return punts than Xavier Worthy?
And it keeps Royals in the game for the times he's not in the snaps. Worthy doesn't have to keep his head in the game, right? Royals is like, hey, we're keeping you active. Sometimes we're going to call you in to catch some passes. Not going to be very often in the early going. You're pretty far down on the depth chart right now. Let's keep you engaged. Let's keep you active. And, you know, like the most successful punt returners last year were not the best athletes on the team who happened to return punts. And am I going to lose it if Dave Tobe decides he's his starting punt returner? No, that's probably not worth it. But it's like the most successful punt returners in the league last year are dudes you've never heard of. Based on just like average punt return distance.
I thought the Nico
Josh Blackwell, I guess Rashid Shaheed was third best. I've heard of him, obviously. Marcus Jones for the Patriots, Braxton Berrios.
I thought you can be a dude
and be good at punt returns.
I thought Nico did good enough last year that he could single-handedly reserve a spot on the roster because of his punt return ability and what he showed at times last year.
I think we got to remember too, this is Dave Tobe in June talking about the different people that are in the mix, and there's no reason to narrow it down at this point in time. I think Worthy will get some reps. Ultimately, do I think he'll end up being the guy with the most punt returns for the Chiefs next year? No, I do not. But yeah. Do I think he'll be back there? And would I have an issue with it? Not at all. I think some of it's going to be determined by where the Rice suspension is. Is Hollywood Brown healthy? Because, yeah, then you're really pushing it. Otherwise, yeah, Royals, to me, has a shot. And Drew, I agree with you. Remigio, I thought, showed some signs of life there. And if he's going to be your fifth or sixth receiver and make the team, we know you got to play special teams, not just on coverage. But in his case, he could be more valuable returning some of those punts as well. So I think this is more of a training camp. Let's see how many guys are getting reps at that. And then it narrows itself down as we get towards the end of camp in St. Joe. But right now, yeah, it doesn't hurt to have four or five guys mixed in there. And Worthy definitely could present some challenges if you're an opponent.
To your point, though, Cody, if he let's say, again, you don't want this to happen, but let's say Xavier Worthy happened to, you know, strain a hamstring or twist an ankle while doing the punt return stuff. Your point would be valid in the fact, hey, if he misses time because he twisted an ankle on a punt return, I'd rather him twist an ankle running a route or getting tackled.
I just think pitch hit
punt returning.
Like if they want to have him return one punt, Tank Dell returned seven punts last year. They want him to come out and return one every two games when it's late in the third quarter, right before half, and you're trying to be like, the only way we're getting in scoring position if this is a 25-yard return, fine, go nuts. If you think he's good for the job, he should not be the full-time guy. I need him for snaps that are more important than that. In my mind, he's the number two wide receiver on this team last year. I'm sure that's everyone's thought. And has a chance to be second in this team in receiving yardage, or first, depending on what you said, the Rashee Rice stuff. But to your point, if Rashee Rice really does miss 4 to 6 games, Worthy won't be anywhere near a punt return for at least that stretch of time.
All right, up next, let's talk some more Royals baseball. Jake Eisenberg there in Chicago. He'll be broadcasting this weekend. You'll hear it on 96.5 The Fan. We'll ask Jake about what he saw in St. Louis, about Cags, obviously, and what does he think is going on with Cole Reagans, perhaps. That's up next here on Cody and Gold.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. And let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Coming up in about 12 minutes, we'll talk about Aaron Rodgers finally making a decision. He's going to sign with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
What?
Uh-huh.
No way.
It's going to happen. All the rumors for a while.
I can't believe it.
Actually going to happen on June 6th, and he'll report to minicamp. We'll get into that in just a little bit. What does that mean for the AFC North? What does it mean for the Steelers? Does it actually change their win total at all for the upcoming season?
One game, bro.
That's coming up in just a bit. But let's go out to Chicago. That's where the Royals are going to begin a series tonight against the White Sox, fresh off a series win in St. Louis. We welcome in Jake Eisenberg. You heard him, I believe, on FanDuel yesterday, but of course you always hear him on 96.5 The Fan as well. Jake, I don't know, what did you guys land at, like 2 or 3 in the morning yesterday? How you feeling?
No, thankfully it was a little bit earlier than that. Okay. It's not a very long flight from St. Louis to Chicago, so we didn't get in at too late an hour. It was good.
Solid. Well, the road trip ended up in St. Louis turning out well. I know we were joking to begin our show. You know, the text line was a little negative about how things transpired, but they get 2 of 3 there in St. Louis, and people are focused on, you know, that first game of that doubleheader. I guess, thank goodness, game two actually happened, and that one counts just as much as the first one.
Yeah, and look, game one of the doubleheader, that's a loss that's going to sting. You know, you take a 3-0 lead into the seventh. Noah Cameron pitches the way that he has been pitching. That's one that you feel like you should win and hope you do win, and ultimately it comes down to the extra inning place runner, which I happen to like the place runner. I'm okay with it, but I understand why it's a frustrating thing. But yeah, game two, you scored 7 runs in the first 5 innings and hit a couple of homers. And I'll be honest, that was my big takeaway from the series was mostly the offense, the fact that they scored more than 5 runs in 3 straight games. But within that, the fact that they homered in all 3 games and had multiple homers in 2 of the 3 games, that's not something that we've seen from the Royals offense this season. And that was a really welcome sight.
Let's talk a little bit about Noah Cameron first, because I do want to get to the offense and what they did. Bobby Witt Jr. in particular had a couple of real flashy moments in that series, including that defensive play. But Noah Cameron, like, I understand it's not sustainable at the he's going to have a 0.5 ERA the rest of the year. But what are the things that you hear around the organization? What are the coaches saying that, like, will last or can last or has staying power about it? Because when you start tossing in the names of only guy to do it other than Fernando Valenzuela, it obviously stands out.
I mean, yeah, that's ridiculous, right? I mean, it's kind of crazy what he's done and the fact that, yeah, Fernando Mania is like the only thing that we have to compare this to. The main words that I keep hearing when we talk about Noah Cameron are composure and poise. And that's incredibly obvious when you watch him pitch. He doesn't seem rattled at all. Not that he should be rattled, but you know, even his big league debut, you know, down in Tampa, when he was taking a no hitter into the 7th inning, it looked like every other Tuesday. You know, he was getting the ball back. He does not waste very much time. He pitches with such a great rhythm and such great timing that I think the poise and composure are the things. I mean, it seems as though those are the things that usually pitchers develop over the course of 3, 4, 5 years to become a veteran. We see that, you know, I think with Seth Lugo a good amount. He's been doing it for a long time, but he's got that rhythm and he's got that composure where, you know, the next pitch seems just the same as the last pitch. Or if it's a really big pitch, you know, in the 7th inning, you can't really tell based on his demeanor on the mound. And with Noah Cameron, it's kind of the same way. And that's the thing that doesn't ever flow. That stays the same no matter what's going on.
We're talking to Jake Eisenberg here on 96.5 The Fan. You mentioned what stood out to you was that offense. What do you attribute it to? Is it just some of the players that you need to count on are starting to get in a groove a little bit? Vinny, as you pointed out on the broadcast a few times, 7 of 17 now with runners in scoring position. Is it just even CAG's presence to a certain extent that everybody else feels less pressure and nobody's talking about them? They're all talking about CAG's. What do you think it is?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's any one answer. I think it's a number of things. I think, sure, Jack Caglione getting called up definitely, you know, injects some energy. Bobby Witt Jr. said as much, you know, postgame on Tuesday, and so did a lot of the other guys in the clubhouse postgame on Tuesday. But also, I think, you know, maybe you look at the lineup shuffle a little bit, moving Michael Garcia up to the three hole. You know, you have, you know, your action players in the top third, as J.J. Piccolo put it, and you have your run producers in that middle third. And the bottom of the lineup has done a great job at getting on base to the top of the lineup, whether it was Kyle Isbell, who had a couple of hits in the series, or Freddie Fermin, who hit that bomb of a home run in game two yesterday. You're seeing a bit of a deeper lineup, and Jack Caglione is certainly part of that. I think it's also, yeah, you're seeing guys that you count on, like Vinny Pasquantino and Salvador Perez, start to produce with runners in scoring position the way that we know they can. I mean, the thing that I've been looking at is kind of what's happened recently with runners in scoring position. I think sometimes we can get a little bit lost when we look at the season totals for any particular player, like, oh, this guy's batting 200 or this guy's batting, you know, 270. I'm a little bit more curious sometimes on what has happened in the most recent games, what's happened most immediately. And when you look at what the Royals have done the last two series now with runners in scoring position, so you go back to the beginning of the series against the Tigers, I'll give you some batting averages with runners in scoring position. Since the beginning of the series against the Tigers, Vinny Pasquantino, 417. Salvador Perez, 346. Jonathan India, 308. Kyle Isbell, 400. Michael Garcia, 300. Nick Lofton, 333. These are smaller sample sizes, obviously, but these are guys that are producing runs the way that you expect them to be producing runs, and certainly expect them to be producing runs at the beginning of the season. And they're all starting to click at the same time, which is everything that we hoped would happen, right?
This might not be a conversation that you've had yet, Jake, with people internally, but I'm now kind of curious because you mentioned Nick Lofton. Is there some sense of, like, why every single guy who's coming up, look, I'm not claiming they're all superstars, but Drew Waters, Nick Lofton, and I'm trying to forget which one I'm forgetting about.
But Rave?
Like, oh, no, not Rave. And maybe one other guy. The guys who struggled the last time they came up, having a better run this time around, right? They've become productive. Or Kyle Isbell is more what I'm thinking of. He didn't get sent down, but seemingly he's having a more productive season. You get a sense of, like, why those guys are just being more like the everyday big leaguers who can fill in situationally in these big spots or doing a better job this time around?
Yeah, I think the answer is simply time, and development takes time, and not every single player is going to come to the big leagues and hit the ground running, whether they're a first round pick or a third round pick or a second round pick. And that, you know, that was just Lofton, Isbell, and Waters, you know, their respective draft positions. I also think that these guys, now having spent a little bit of time in the big leagues, Waters, you know, a lot in 2023, Lofton a good amount last year, Isbell's of course been a big leaguer for 4 or 5 years now, I think they have a much stronger sense of self, a much stronger sense of the kinds of players that they are, and also where their opportunities are going to come at the big league level, where, you know, think about, you know, your jobs every day. You know, you feel when you have a new job and you are in a performance-based business, you feel a pressure to succeed every day, and you feel a pressure to do the thing and prove to everybody that you can continue doing the thing. And I'm not saying that that's something that manifests every single day, but I think that we all find ourselves to be a little bit more successful when we take a step back and realize, okay, you know, here are the things that I'm really good at. These are the things that got me here. These are the things that are going to help me stay here. And I think we're seeing with Kyle Isbell, he knows the kind of player that he is. Nick Lofton, he knows the kind of player that he is. Drew Waters, he knows the kind of player that he is. And I realize that's a little bit vague, but we're seeing, I think, particularly with Waters and Lofton, guys who have had a little bit less experience than Isbell, like, they've realized that, you know, home run hitting is not necessarily what they're going to be most successful at. Spraying line drives, running the bases really well, making both the routine plays and the exceptional plays defensively are things that are going to help elevate this team. And, you know, talking to Nick Lofton in particular, you know, he said multiple times that, you know, if he hits 100 doubles in a year, like, that's a great season. If he hits 100 doubles and zero home runs, that's great. He's trying to hit doubles every single time. And if the ball happens to go out, it happens to go out. And it happened to go out on Tuesday. That's a really good sign. And I think it's the same for Waters. And I think it's the same for Isbell, who I think might be one of the most underrated players, if not in the division, in the game this year, the way he's playing defensively and what he's done offensively too. I think Isbell's putting together a terrific season so far.
So I think it would be foolish after just 2 days of baseball and three games to have a rush reaction to what we've seen from Jack Caglione. Whatever your opinion was 3 days ago should, to me, be the same opinion now. It's way too small of a sample size. But what have you seen with him? Gets his first hit. He's, what, 1-for-13 out of the gate?
Yeah, I mean, I think initially we saw a good amount of aggressiveness. I think that first game he was swinging at the first or second pitch and putting it in play during his at-bats. And then in game two yesterday, we saw a little bit deeper counts and unfortunately some strikeouts came with that, and those strikeouts are going to be there. I think offensively what you saw is what Bobby Witt Jr. talked about. You see a big league presence in the box, and I think it's pretty obvious that other teams are thinking that too based on how he's getting pitched. I mean, we saw three different times that the Cardinals made a pitching change almost purely because Jack Caglione was coming to the plate. John King came in twice specifically to face Cags, and then once came in to face Vinny Salvi and Cags. And so, you know, there's a level of respect that exists with Jack Caglione already with the way that teams are pitching him, and not just making a pitching change, but also the types of pitches that he's seeing and the sequences that he's seeing, I think, early on. And so I think he's going to be just fine. I think that there's, you know, some early season variance, some early batted ball variance. I mean, there's only one batted ball that's been in the air, and that was his first one. So you'd like to see a little bit more of that loft, but you could say that for any player. And then I think defensively, in right field, he looked just fine out there. There was nothing, there was no indication that he was overmatched in right field. And I think, to be quite honest, if you hadn't told me that he'd only played 12 games in the minors in right field, if we had no idea what his level of experience was in the outfield, I think you would have watched the games and you would have said, oh yeah, all right, I guess he can play right field. So I think, you know, it's all good signs and all good things for Jack his first three games.
Do you think we're going to continue to see here for a bit, though, the late game defensive switch, as we saw it a couple times there where he, well, eighth or ninth inning, I think they pulled him for a defensive replacement. Is that something that you've heard that's going to continue for much of this year? Is that just the first couple week thing?
I don't know how long that'll continue, but I didn't find that to be particularly surprising.
Yeah.
I also think it makes a lot of sense. You have a guy that, yes, we do know his level of experience in the outfield, and it's not all that much. And when you have a late lead that you're trying to protect, you want your best defense out there. Right now, the Royals' best outfield defense is Waters, Isbell, and Rave left to right in the outfield. And if that means that, you know, Jack Caglione has to come out of the game so that John Rave can be in there defensively, if, you know, Rave hasn't already started the game, I think that makes a lot of sense. And of course, it comes back to bite a little bit when, you know, the game winds up tied and you go to extras and, you know, Jack Caglione's position come up. But I mean, personally, I have a lot of belief in John Rave too. I'd like to see more of John Rave, to be quite honest. So I think, yes, we'll see that defensive replacement. And I think it's important to keep in mind that you see that with, you know, superstar players across baseball all the time. You know, that's why there are defensive replacement type players that exist on the bench so that they can go in and be, you know, a defensive upgrade in the late innings. We've seen that, you know, for all time in baseball. So I don't think that's all that surprising. I don't think it's something really to get bent out of shape about either.
I think it's funny nobody even mentioned Vinny got pinch ran for. So like if the game had gone extras,
right,
that
right.
would have happened and just like, the same. Yeah.
And are we going to be upset that somebody gets pinch run for when, you know, you're trying to score a run in a situation where you need a little bit more speed? Look, I'm not taking anything away from Vinny's foot speed. I know he's never been caught stealing a base, but in certain situations, you want somebody that's a little bit faster, and that's okay.
He told me he wanted two this year. We'll see if he actually gets there, Jake. I got two last questions for you. One, how many players total do you think in baseball can make the catch that Bobby Witt Jr. made yesterday? And do they tell you where they're going to put the golden bobblehead amongst all the other ones next Saturday?
I have no inside information on the golden bobblehead. I did see them,
yeah.
up in the front office, and they are really cool. They're shiny, they're golden.
Would they have noticed?
No. I think they would have noticed. They have them pretty well locked down, and they certainly have counted how many exist. So I think they would have noticed a one missing. I don't know where they are. As for who can make the plays that Bobby Witt Jr. made this past week, the cop-out answer is one. To be honest,
yeah. Because
I've never seen anybody else do what Bobby Witt Jr. did. As you're asking that question, I'm thinking, you know, maybe if we had seen Fernando Tatis Jr. stick at shortstop, maybe he could make some of those plays like that. I feel like we saw him make some of those plays like that when he was playing shortstop early on in his career. But obviously he's a right fielder now, not a shortstop. So as far as players that can do what Bobby Witt Jr. is doing, I think it's one. He is a one of one player, and we have known this now for a few years. We are running out of words to describe the things that he does. And frankly, the fact that he does the things that he does as often as they happen, somehow like makes it seem like it's normal. And I think it's important to remember that it's not. This is not normal. This is not something that is routine. This is something that is unfathomable and extraordinary and special, and it's ours to enjoy. And that's really, really cool.
All right, Jake, appreciate it, man. Enjoy Chicago. We'll check in next week.
All right, thanks, guys. Take care.
There you go. That's Jake Eisenberg. You'll hear him throughout the weekend on 96.5 The Fan as the Royals take on the White Sox. And yeah, they announced, the Royals did announce, for those that don't know what you were referencing, the Golden Bobbleheads. Yeah, the video just came out. Next Saturday, the 14th, the Royals will have
a Bobby record-breaking bobblehead. There's right. Like for the first 20,000 fans or whatever.
Seven of them will be gold and Bobby autographed the cap, I think it is.
Yeah.
So seven of them randomly throughout there. So just a heads up, you want to be looking for those. That'll be a pretty darn cool item to get if you luck out. Seven of 20-something thousand.
It feels like I should try to go get one just as an effort to like... Oof. You know, like not that I need the gold.
They're all
going to
the boxes
just, you
know, all going to look the same. And then you're just going to hope you're going to slow. It's going to be like a darn card reveal here. You're trying, you know,
you have a 0.00035% chance.
Perfect. Now, the difference with this, though, like any would be unlike the lottery where there's all these different combinations. You could increase your odds by there's people that do buy have multiple sure. tickets and they will have multiple bobbleheads.
Or if you're a group growing with 20 people, right. hypothetically, yes. you as a group mm-hmm. have a much better chance of securing one of those bobbleheads outside.
Let
of
us
that.
Know if you guys get one. That's next Saturday. Let us know if one of you are lucky enough.
To get the golden Bobby Witt mm-hmm. Jr. autograph. It'd be pretty sweet.
That'd be a cool item to have.
I don't keep a lot of sports memorabilia. That'd that feels cool. like one that would end up on a shelf. I know I'd probably be bullied into putting in the garage sale eventually, which I'm always open to be clear. I'm bullying works is what I've learned in adulthood. Not on everybody, but it does work on me.
That doesn't mean that it's good.
No.
Coming up in 12 minutes, we'll talk more about Noah Cameron. You asked Jake about Cameron there. We're going to get into that a little bit more in a bit. But the news yesterday afternoon while the Royals were playing some day baseball, bigger picture in the sports world at the time, people were talking about
sports
Aaron Rodgers
being key there.
What's that?
I said sports world being key there.
Yes.
In the news department.
Yes. True. Very true. It was an interesting day to be on social. Interesting day to be on social media yesterday. Yeah. Sports wise, Aaron Rodgers. Also, at the same time, announced that he will sign today with the Pittsburgh Steelers and show up for minicamp. All the talk for months, everybody assumed this was going to be the destination, but would he make a decision or not? How long would he drag this out? Well, the answer was up until June 6th. He will be the starting quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers unless he still wakes up in July all of a sudden decides not to play football. But and with him, you never know. You really do never know. But
I think he's now likely
because he signed a contract.
Yes.
Because he signed a contract. To play with the Pittsburgh Steelers. So that part is over. Look, I think the Steelers with Mason Rudolph and Will Howard before were going to be an 8-win football team, maybe a 9-win football team because Mike Tomlin thrives at being mediocre record-wise. With Aaron Rodgers, best case scenario, 10 or 11 wins, which is kind of where they've been. Like the Steelers, you guys tell me if you disagree, they have not vaulted themselves into the conversation with the Chiefs and Bills and Ravens. Nope.
No.
No.
Gosh,
they
no.
are a team
below that.
That is going to be capable of winning some big games during the year. They're going to make the AFC North more challenging. They are, best case, a 10 or 11 win football team, which means potentially a one and done again playoff. Maybe you sneak out one playoff win. I don't believe Aaron Rodgers is going to elevate them in that organization to getting to where they haven't been in a while since Big Ben.
I don't. This does not move the needle for me. But, like, I don't know. When his numbers were statistically close-ish to Mahomes last year, because a lot of people want to point that out, his team was behind all the time. I do not think Aaron Rodgers, unlike maybe Russell Wilson or some of these other guys, I don't think he just cooked. I think he's still a pretty good football player.
No, they're going to get better quarterback play than last year.
Yes.
I just don't think it.
I actually think the roster's worse, though. I think the defense is worse. The trading out Metcalf for Pickens doesn't move the needle for me. What is their offense? It's Metcalf and Calvin Austin and Freiermuth.
Yeah, I mean, I think Metcalf's an upgrade. But yeah.
So like, I'm not exactly like blown away with what they're doing offensively. They're in a very difficult division. They'll make it harder on teams like the Ravens and Cincinnati and others inside of there. So like that for that part, it makes sense. Do I think, like if you made me right now list the teams I think have a a real, real, real chance to win a Super Bowl today. They're not on it. They on it for you?
No, I just said that's what I'm no, I'm like, totally with you. I mean, look, in their division, they have the third best odds to win it. They're 5-1. The Bengals are 2-1, and the Ravens are -130. In the AFC, just to win the conference, the Pittsburgh Steelers still are a ways down the board to do that. And for whatever reason, FanDuel doesn't even list them. I don't know why that's the case. Oh, there we go. Sorry. 21-1.
Do you think he'll have a better debut than it went for the Jets? You remember how the Jets debut went.
He's not gonna, I would hope so.
Well, I don't think he's going to run out of Heinz Field or AccraShare or whatever stadium with a flag and tear his AC or Achilles right away.
I refuse to call it by its new name.
Yeah, it's Heinz Field. It's Heinz Field.
I think you can make an argument that
the Steelers are playing the Jets, though, week one, which is an incredible noon
slate
game. They
said they would have made it prime time
but it's
if
at
they
noon.
Knew for sure.
And the Chiefs would have already played a couple days earlier, so you can lock into that one if you want to have some fun drop. Justin Fields versus Aaron Rodgers.
I don't know. Should I care yet that like, is that a rivalry?
It's still
one
fun.
Season for him.
It's still fun. He's playing his old team.
I do think it's kind of funny, and this, I feel like, is under-discussed as a part of this. The Steelers' first choice was not Aaron Rodgers. The Steelers' first choice for quarterback this year was Justin Fields, the guy you just mentioned is going to be starting for the Jets. So, like, while this is an upgrade, they were still trying to keep Justin Fields first.
Yeah, it's a one or two win. It's a one or two win upgrade, max. And it might even just be like,
and it might only
be
against Drew's Bengals, you know? The Steelers always get them. Also, the Browns actually get you worse. Can you explain to me why the Browns are always beating Cincinnati? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, that's because Miles Garrett terrorizes the offensive line.
Do the Bengals have the Steelers in the first 4 weeks? Because now I'm just starting to think they're going to start horrible.
Typically,
again,
they don't play them in the first. Normally, they save the Ravens and the Steelers for the back half of the season or the latter 10 weeks.
That's good scheduling. You know, you got to keep
them. You can
more
make an argument in a way that the Steelers aren't contenders because of Aaron Rodgers. Like, there's no upgrade at all. Like, the last two full seasons.
Oh, it's definitely an upgrade over Russell Wilson.
I'm just saying, the last two seasons, like, he doesn't make them any more of a contender than they already were, in my opinion.
I think there's...
Because if you look at the last two seasons, he's only thrown double-digit interceptions, which was a stretch that he didn't have for a very long time. He had the worst rating of his career last year.
I know, but he is only... Three years removed from a 70% completion, 4,100 yard, 37 touchdown, 4 interceptions.
I just don't think he moves.
5 years from 48 touchdowns and 5 picks.
I don't think he moves the needle at all for them. Like, they're the same team with Aaron Rodgers as they were with Russell Wilson, and it's just they're playing the game that the Colts played a few years ago when they did Phillip Rivers and Matt Ryan in back-to-back seasons. That's what the Steelers are trying to do. They're just trying to salvage whatever they can, but they're not going to be able to with Aaron Rodgers. It's just not going to happen.
I'm no Aaron Rodgers defender, but I think lumping him in as he's the same as Russell Wilson is insulting.
I don't think Russell Wilson
started all season and finished with 2,400 yards.
He didn't start all season, though.
Remember,
Justin Fields, that was the whole thing, is why were they pulled? You know, that was the whole debate the first month.
2,400 yards and 16 touchdowns. I don't know if I mean.
No, Aaron Rodgers
is
better.
I like Aaron Rodgers more than most people do, but I just don't think he doesn't make them more of a contender in my book.
Agreed.
At all.
Agreed.
Even though he's a better quarterback.
Correct. Yeah. He is better than what they had last year, but he's not. The value that he brings is not enough to swing it to where suddenly you're like, oh no, look out, here come the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah.
And I was trying to just check where the pulse was in Pittsburgh a little bit earlier this morning, and it seems kind of split. There's a huge chunk of Steelers fans that are upset that they signed Rodgers because they believe that they need to kind of have the whole teardown thing that we've talked about, right? Or they want to see what Will Howard is capable of being, right? And I don't know what it would be, but Aaron Rodgers or Kirk Cousins was going to start week one for this team. They were either going to whiff on Aaron Rodgers and he was going to stay, retire or whatever, or they were going to go try to get Kirk Cousins. Now, that's the other angle. We can get into this later on when we talk about it again. Now, what happens with Kirk Cousins? Because this landing spot's gone now.
He hopes somebody gets hurt.
That's all he has, right? Because I'm still not convinced, though, week one. You mean before the season? Because are you guys convinced that Kirk Cousins is going to be the backup for the first month or two of the season? I don't think he
is
going to
start. I think he might be.
I don't think he's going to be in Atlanta for week one.
I
still don't.
Poorly run organization. I think they're going to do what poorly run organizations do. Make things awkward. Make everyone uncomfortable.
Some of the Steelers are trying to put themselves in a situation to draft Arch Manning.
No, they're not.
Not by trade.
Mason Rudolph.
They made it worse.
Yeah, no. If they wanted that, Will Howard and Mason Rudolph would be their quarterbacks all year. Going to get Aaron Rodgers does not mean you think you're going to be a 6 or 7 win football team.
Do you know why they're doing this? Because, like I said, the Colts did the same thing, but the Colts were never going to win with Phillip Rivers and Matt Ryan. It was never going to happen. the Steelers are never going to win with Aaron Rodgers. They were never going to win with Russell Wilson. Why are they? They're staying in quarterback purgatory, basically, is what they're doing.
Yeah, they're going to be a mediocre team again.
I would just retire, man. Before I went to go win 9 games in Pittsburgh, I just quit. Like, it already ended kind of weird. You left the franchise you spent your entire career with. You
had two back in the playoffs.
Pretty miserable years with the Jets, and now, yeah, we'll get Aaron Rodgers versus either Buffalo, whoever doesn't get the 1 seed, Buffalo or Kansas City is the 2-7.
Rodgers and Mahomes for the first time.
It'll be, yeah.
What a sorry like matchup at this point in their career, though.
The 2-7 matchup that's never been won by the 7 seed yet. Isn't that correct? They're like over since we added the extra playoff team.
Rodgers Mahomes 5 years ago was the matchup we wanted 3 years ago. And because of injuries and COVID and other things, we haven't been able to get it. And now if they play each other in a postseason game, let's say, it's not going to have the same feeling. I don't think, at least.
Oh, right. I agree.
Up next, though, let's get back to the Royals for a little bit. Noah Cameron, where he stacks up in the American League at this point in time. And we will talk about the NBA Finals. What a finish it was for the Indiana Pacers. Drew is wearing his Pacers gear. We'll let him gloat for a little bit. Next.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Grilling season is in full swing, and Whole Foods Market has the essentials to make summer meals simple, flavorful, and affordable. With great everyday prices across the store, it's easy to build a crowd-pleasing spread without sacrificing quality. The 365 by Whole Foods Market brand offers a wide selection of grilling favorites, like no antibiotics ever chicken thighs, ground beef, wild-caught salmon burgers, and uncured hot dogs. There are also plenty of sides to choose from, including organic salad kits, kettle cooked chips, tortilla chips, and bold zesty salsas. For toppings and marinades, look for organic condiments like no sugar added ketchup and yellow mustard, plus spice rubs and sauces to bring extra flavor. To round things out, pick up sparkling water, organic lemonade, and pints of ice cream, plus organic cake cones for an easy summer dessert. There are so many ways to save on summer grilling favorites at Whole Foods Market.